Arrow paced back and forth. Her pizza should have been here within 3 minutes or less, and it's been about 2.5 minutes. That's less, as a matter of fact. So where is his fucking playfully hot pizza? That totes tubular za. Arrow had learned her lesson over the last 2 months. She even ordered Trico his very own pizza, and they hadn't even spent the evening doing action poses this time. But the fact of the matter is, she was hungry, and as always, impatient. How could a pizza take nearly 3 minutes to arrive? It was almost 3 minutes now. Don't they understand she's very hungry? Don't... Someone knocked on Arrow's hay bale. The pizza, the pie, finally. The pie was on a Hovermatic pizza dispensary unit, and Arrow paid using contactless payment. Safety first, after all. However, since there was no contact, it was easy for the thief, a blur of motion, to snatch the pizza and abscond with it. The pizza delivery individual was aghast. This was the third time tonight. They were losing so many pizzas and money due to replacement orders because of this. Arrow was not pleased. Far from it. Who dares steal her special pizza and her younger brother's highly awaited dinner? Matt had not given them enough to cover an entirely new order, after all. And besides, it was the principle of it all. She noticed a trail of deep footprints leading off through the mud, because it was conveniently raining. She dashed back into her stable, turned the far right hay bale 20 degrees to the right, which caused her trough to tilt and lead into a hidden chamber. Leaping down the trough slide, Arrow's normal horse and flesh body gets covered in armor that doesn't really obscure her identity, but it's a thought that counts. The Arrow cast sign slides out of the way, and Arrow is fired from a catapult in the directions that the footprints went. Meanwhile, at a new upstart pizzeria in Delhi, the sound of a stolen carrot and apple pizza being devoured with one sickening crunch can be heard. Ha ha ha! With every other fine dining establishment and greasy-ass eatery in town failing to deliver their meals and keep them secure, only my semi-edible swill will be allowed to make it into customers' waiting gobs without incident. I will be rolling in cash. I will be like Scrooge McDuck, except all of my money will be through wireless transfer, so I guess I'll have to swim in cyberspace. Ha 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 ha! And, to elaborate on my evil scheme, I will have enough money to buy out the judges of the next Podcastville at 500 Horse Derby. Arrow will never triumph over me again. I will be known as Best Horse. Never in history has evil prospered. Who's there? An equine silhouette appears against the setting sun. And neither shall cheaters prosper this day, Epona, or should I say Bad Horse. You would do well to learn how to properly navigate the geography of your own game. Learn to overcome small blades of grass without rearing up and screaming. But you do not wish to improve yourself. You only want ill-gotten glory, unearned, and you shall not have it. The horses wheeled, their blades clashing again and again in the air, their anger and mutual disdain fueling their bodies long after they should have given out. Give up, Arrow. Besides, I already ate your pizza. Arrow's eyes flashed a glare of righteous indignation. The sealed sword on her saddle began to glow brilliantly. Now, let me explain. When Arrow's fury of justice goes beyond the limit, her mystic sword horsey is unsealed and formidable power is released. Using her ultimate move, the Stampede Slash, Pona is vanquished and her pizzeria demolished. All is right in the world, for now. But Arrow is not necessarily happy. Her pizza is gone, but at least she saved Trico's. She trots home dejected, hungry. I guess I'll have to have a peanut butter sandwich. But there's only heels left, and I'm not a fan of heels. Trico is waiting for her in the kitchen, however. Several fresh pizzas on the counter. Arrow! All of the reputable pizzerias were so grateful that you stopped the thief that they sent these over as thanks, and for you to actually have a happy ending in one of these intros for once. And that was the most delicious slice of za Arrow ever ate. So, this is a highly...
The kinds of adventures we have on this podcast.
Yeah, trying to work a horse into a pizza cat story, but this is the podcast for June. I was about to say 2012, it's 2021. It's going to focus on the Famicom game Kato Ninden Taiende, which is, of course, the original identity of what we know as Samurai Pizza Cats. Before we get into all of that, however, Chris, how has your June been?
It's kind of like the opening to the Japanese Samurai Pizza Cats, where they say something about a bit of the future and a bit of the past or something like that. Whatever. So my June's been pretty cool. Not to really, like, you know, rub it in or anything, but I am vaccinated now, so I took that opportunity to go see some friends, finally. We're all vaccinated, by the way. We're all doing it safely. Don't worry, everyone. I'm being smart about it. But it was just a small thing. It was glad to actually get out and travel again, because I'm the kind of person who was pressed up against my window the first week of lockdown, wondering when we could get out. So, yeah, I'm glad things are starting to improve, and hopefully things will also get better for you in time, Matt.
Yeah, well, it's being accelerated here, so I'm expecting to hear a bit when I can book within a week or two, so we'll see.
Otherwise, besides that, I haven't really been playing much lately. I'm still focusing on Kingsfield for that wiki that I'm working on. I'll say the link again at the outro. But otherwise, for as media I'm consuming, I think roughly 2 months ago, I was talking about how I picked up the radio scripts for Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And since now, I have read two of the novels in the 5-part trilogy. I know that Douglas Adams was trying to make all his adaptations different, and the novel pretty much follows the same series of events as the radio scripts did. But I think maybe because the radio scripts were my first real exposure to Hitchhiker's Guide, and just by the nature of being a radio broadcast, it was more dynamic, and I just prefer that. But I think the novels are still pretty good. I mean, there's still parts that seem new, and they still make me laugh. So even though I'm not as wild about how the novelization is, I'm still looking forward to reading the rest of it.
So is the novel a novelization of a radio drama, or is what you're reading the novelization of a radio drama based on a novel?
I think the way Adams did it was the radio broadcast was first, and then he wrote the novel. And then if I understand how Hitchhikers works, then he also made the TV series or something. And whatever other adaptations he's done since then. I'm not big enough fan yet to know the facts.
Okay. You know, I still have to read that stuff as well, so, you know.
But otherwise, yeah, not much is going on with me. Matt, how has your June been?
June hasn't been too bad. Not too bad. As for what I've been playing, of course I was playing Monster Hunter Rise. I was on my crown quest for that, and I finished the crowns in the game, and version 3.0 came out, which is technically version 1.0 because it had the ending of the game in it. And, yeah. So my overall opinion of Monster Hunter Rise, and I can kind of give a more informed opinion about it now that the game is complete, more or less. I'm not sure if any more updates are coming beyond event quests or what have you.
It's that inevitable G rank?
Well, that's inevitable, but right now with Monster Hunter Stories 2 coming out next month, I don't think they want to show any kind of updates if Rise has any more updates coming, because they want to draw attention to that first. So, Monster Hunter Rise, I would say, it plays really well. Some of the weapons are the most fun they've ever been, and it's really well realized. Some of the returning monsters are the best they've ever been. Keizu's as shit as it's always been. In 3.0, Apex and Ogre's a really good fight. Crimson Glow Valstrax, the Valstrax variant they introduced, was a really good fight. So I'm overall quite happy with the game. I wouldn't have gone for all of the crowns if I wasn't. Now, there are issues with quest variety and the prominence of paid DLC, especially on the roadmap, and especially with layered armor. And I'm kind of lukewarm on some of the maps. Some are great, some I'm not really sold on yet. And while the Wyvern riding system is mechanically fine, I don't like how quick it is to achieve, or how a monster you're fighting will ignore you to go slap another monster and make it rideable instantly. And I kind of wish elders behaved like Apex monsters and that they couldn't be ridden at all. On the other hand, Kimura is a great setting, the characters are memorable, and the buddy system is getting back towards Generation Ultimate system, which, while not as in-depth as that, it's something I prefer to World's Palico tools. And the presentation and music are mostly airtight, especially Camellia's new theme arrangement, and it's just the start of things with the RE engine, so I'm expecting good things in the future. So while there's definitely been some sobering after the honeymoon period, I still had a great time with the game. Like I said, I wouldn't have put myself through a fresh hell looking for crowns otherwise.
Well, at least the new monsters are cool from when you talked about them last cast, so it's got positives at least.
Certainly, like most of the new monsters are fantastic. They're really well designed, really well realized. Gosarag's still my lad. And like I said, the gameplay is fantastic. I'm sure that if we get Arise Ultimate, some of the issues I have will be addressed, and I'm looking forward to that. As for what else I've been playing, I finally played through Shantae, the Game Boy Color version, and it's taken me so long to do this. It's sort of another case of out of sight, out of mind. Back when I first got a Game Boy Advance, even then, trying to price a Shantae cart, because I
Yeah,
didn't
I
have a
think
Game
the
Boy
reason
Color.
why it's been so out of place, out of mind for both of us, because it actually was really out of place for us. That price for carts were ridiculous.
Yeah, like even when it was first out, it was like $100, and I was like, oh, I'm not going to pay $100 for it. I'll get it in a couple of years when it's not $100. It's difficult to get a cartridge of it. And the thing with Shantae is it was also difficult to emulate. It was like notoriously difficult to emulate. So that's not a route I'd like to take, but it's not even one I could take at the time. I'm sure it's different now. But anyways, I actually got this through Limited Run, so I have the Limited Run Game Boy Color cartridge, which I'll keep sealed, and I have it on the Switch as well. So I finally got to play through it. Really fun game. Lots of really clever dungeons that don't really repeat gimmicks between them. So each dungeon has its own flavor. Each dungeon's pretty clever. They don't overstay their welcome. They're not overbearing, but they're clever, and the bosses are pretty cool. And Shantae's transformations are cool. The sprites are really cute and clean. I thought it was a really fun little game, and I'm looking forward to playing the rest of them because, I mean, the rest of them are much more available. It's just like the way I am is if I haven't played the first one, I don't really want to play the rest, and now I've finally played it, so they're on the table now as well.
Did you also back that Kickstarter that just kind of sits and haunts you because you didn't play the first game? Of course, I'm talking about myself because I still haven't
Yeah.
cleared the first game,
Yeah.
but now you can move on.
Yeah. I can move on. I'm ready to go. The other game I've been playing, I started Shin Megami Tensei 3 Nocturne HD Remaster, and this is my
Featuring
first.
Dante from the Devil May Cry series, if you have that DLC.
I don't know if that's included or not. I assume it is.
It's DLC because the release has Raido Kuzunoha.
Oh, okay.
I think there were three different releases of Nocturne on the PS2, and the reason why Dante is in one of the releases is because the artist for Shin Megami Tensei, Kaneko, he also did the designs for the Devil Triggers of Dante and Virgil in Devil May Cry 3. So that was kind of like the crossover. And then Raido Kuzunoha is from one of the other Shin Megami Tensei spin-offs, and I think that was in a secondary release of Nocturne, where they were just like, I don't know, here's our other PS2 character, let's have them cross over as well. So, yeah.
And he ties into Supreme Teenage Witch because of Salem as his partner.
Yeah.
Yeah, though, like I assume there's like a lot of lore and connections I don't get because again, this is my first one, and I've looked at the series before, and it's fucking massive. And when a series is that storied, and there's so many different variations and versions of it, and where to start, and I've got people telling me to do this or do that, I'm like, whatever. So this was a convenient way to start it for me, and just play it at my own pace and kind of get into it that way, and yeah, I'm enjoying it. I like the fusion mechanics. I like the press turn system. The one thing I don't like about the fusions is that I don't want to give up on some of these guys. I get too sentimental about them. I kept my little paper guy around for a long, long time, and it's like I'm not even using them in battle. You're just taking up a slot, buddy. I gotta let you go, and I felt bad about it, but.
Oh.
You know, I shouldn't be getting sentimental about them, I guess, but I know you
They're still in
can.
your compendium if you want to look at them longingly and being like, I wish your stats were good enough for endgame.
There's obviously a lot of attention paid to the various mythology that they pull from, and there's a lot that are pretty colorful and cool, and yet there's also the same guy in three different robes, so it runs the spectrum, right? And yeah, I'm enjoying it. I'll probably approach more of them in the future. I think going back to back on any of these would be a big mistake for me because it's like I think it would be quite exhausting. So yeah, I'll play more of them in the future. I'm open to it, and Probably have it finished by the next podcast anyway, so we'll see you at that point.
Yeah, I'm glad you're liking it so far. You'll probably clear it before I ever clear it, because as I've probably mentioned on this podcast multiple times, my PS2 is still broken, and I had a file of Nocturne past Matador at some point, and then my PS2 died, so no more Nocturne for me. You'll clear the game, and I'm just waiting to get the HD release, maybe on PC. Just holding off to get that built up. But otherwise, yeah, I think Nocturne's a good place to start. It was also like the first Shin Megami Tensei to be released to the West, not including the spin-off Jack Bros on the virtual console, but and you know, the other game like Quirk, which was developed by Atlas that you played. So
well, is Quirk part of Shin Megami Tensei? I do.
Maybe.
I played through the Puzzle Boy minigame in Nocturne, and I'm like, this is just Quirk. And when I saw the mechanics of it, and then I saw some of the stages, like, these are just Quirk's levels. And, you know, of course there are some that trip me up, because they're actually kind of tough puzzles in Quirk, using the turnstiles especially. But a lot of them I kind of remembered, so it wasn't too bad. It wasn't a bad Magatama for me, I guess.
Yeah, did I say Jack Bros was on the virtual console? Sorry, I need to make it more scathing. It's actually the Virtual Boy. Yeah, that was a real good time in the... Yeah. yeah, Nocturne's cool.
I was honestly interested in Jack Bros when I saw the Nintendo Power. But the Virtual Boy's a whole other discussion. I never had one, and now I kind of wish I did because it's a collector's item, but, you know.
Yeah, if anything, you can appreciate Nocturne for its cool acid jazz soundtrack, and... Yeah. I always thought the atmosphere and presentation of some of the areas in Nocturne were really cool.
This month was E3, and it's also the Summer Games Fest and all that. Is there anything at all coming out of E3 you want to mention?
What I'll start with is that when I was actually on vacation visiting my friends, that's when all this was happening, so I missed a lot of news. And I guess because no one really yelled at me about anything, I guess there wasn't much to be excited about. But I do know that the Elden Ring trailer came out, or at least a new one that is more than like 5 seconds long. And I'll say that I think it looks cool. Maybe I'll like it. Maybe it looks a little too Dark Souls for me. And I mean, I love Dark Souls, but at the same time, I kind of wish they went a little more differently with the direction. When Sekiro was first announced and we got more details into Sekiro, I was like, I don't know, maybe I won't like it that much. But in the end, I like the game overall. I have a positive view of it, so that's how I feel about Elden Ring so far. I don't know much about it. I think it looks cool. Maybe a little hesitant, but I'm sure I'll pick up the game on launch, and I'll be like, oh, you know what? Elden Ring is pretty cool. Or I'll be like, you know what? Elden Ring wasn't that good, but whatever. There's other FromSoft games.
No, it definitely has the Dark Souls feeling to it, but, I mean, this is sort of the aesthetic that FromSoft likes to go for now. I don't want to know much more about it. I have a release date, and that's good enough for me. And I'm hoping that it surprises. I'm hoping it does a few unique things, and yeah.
You get a horse. I mean, that seems cool. I hope you keep the horse. I don't know, at least you can borrow the horse.
There are a lot of memes about swamp levels in From Software games and this horse. So, and the never-ending story. So... let's just hope that the horse is all right.
There's also a tall lady. So, I know FromSoft has had big tall ladies before, but, you know, excited about that.
Sure, I'll be excited about tall ladies as well. And yet I didn't buy Resident Evil 8. I guess for me, the standout is Metroid Dread, which was how they presented it in the... in the presentation, like, Nintendo actually had a really good presentation, and how they presented Metroid Dread was really cool, because they, first of all, they showed it as Metroid 5, so you know it's a sequel to Metroid Fusion.
Yeah.
And then they dropped the Dread title, because Metroid Dread for the past 15 years has been the E3 meme, like, people will say, oh, Metroid Dread is this year. I don't know how close it is to the original concept of Dread, but it's dropped, right? So they probably said, let's just make Metroid Dread so they don't have to hashtag it anymore. I'm excited for it. There's a lot of people that talk about how sterile it looks, and it does look sterile. I think they're going for more of a lab horror for this game, which makes sense because of what Samus is after Fusion. And it's the robots that are hunting you. Those hunter-killer robots are Galactic Federation robots. So it kind of makes sense that it would be a bit more pristine. It's not even that pristine. Yeah, I think that as you go deeper into it, it'll get a bit more gnarly, right? Because it's Metroid. And at least that's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, that would be my impression too. So I guess it's to be seen, at least from what it looks like. I mean, it looks like a good addition to the Metroid mainline. So while we wait for whatever the heck is going on with Metroid Prime 4, I think Dread could keep us satisfied.
Oh yeah, it's good. I'm super excited for it. It's coming up in October, so it's like, holy shit, that's pretty soon. And I'll be playing this. And a lot of people are saying, oh, they skipped 4. I'm thinking, no, I don't know if they're joking or they're being serious, but yeah. It's unfortunate that Prime, 4 years later, they still have nothing to show for it. That game was in dire straits, and they had to restart it, I think. So, hopefully, if it comes out, it's not bad, because it doesn't bode well. So, we'll see what happens, I guess.
I guess if there's something I am disappointed in, it's that we still have no idea what the heck is going on with the Waiters game. So, I guess I'm not disappointed. More like, I'll just keep waiting. We waited 9 years for Last Guardian, it's fine.
Who knows, right? Who knows? Other than that, I don't think there's much from E3 I want to talk about. There's a couple of games that I'm interested in, and I'm hoping that this year goes better for development in general, right? Because, like, even my complaints with Rise, a lot of that stems from COVID probably disrupting the last year of its development.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been in development for probably 4 or 5 years. It's in development since World, but a lot of the things that would be implemented at the end were disrupted, right? And that's probably why they chose to disseminate content the way that they did, so they could have the game released by the end of the fiscal year in Japan. But anyways, that's enough talk about that stuff. We'll get on to the podcast then. Kato Ninden Taiende is a 1990 through 1991 anime series produced by Tatsunoko Productions and Sotsu Agency. It focuses on the anachronistic city of Iteropolis, which is populated by animaloids, sort of an anthropomorphic animal android. Here, a secret ninja team, cat animaloids who work in a pizzeria as cover, the Nyanki, work to stop the villainous Kon no Kami and the Kakara clan from seizing the shogunate for themselves. In 1991, Saban gained the rights to localize Kato Ninden Taiende, and they localized it as Samurai Pizza Cats, which was fairly popular here in Canada, at least. It maintains a similar plot, but takes a lot of liberties with pop culture relevance and dialogue. Now, to finally get to the point of this podcast, Kato Ninden Taiende was also adapted for a Famicom game by Tecmo in 1991, featuring characters and robots from the series, but also new faces. And this is the title that we're covering today. So before we get into, you know, the usuals for the game, do you have any experience with the game or with the anime?
I don't know if it was popular in the United States, but it was certainly a cartoon that I watched as a kid. I remember because for some reason that opening was somehow still stuck in my memory years later. But the actual contents of the show were way past me. So all I can say is that I definitely watched the show as a kid enough to be, like, enamored with it. But I guess none of it really stuck with me. And I haven't played the game before. Right. I didn't know there was a game until you told me, Matt.
As for myself, Samurai Pizza Cats aired quite prominently on YTV in Canada. And it aired for a long, long time. And it's one of my favorite shows from my childhood. So it stuck with me for a long, long time. Just sort of the irreverent humor of it. And it's just it's a cool show, and it's a cute show, and it's got a lot of a lot going for it. There's some unfortunate things about the show, of course. I still enjoy it, and I've watched a little bit of it to get prepared for this podcast. I've also watched some Kato Ninden Taiende, which I've also watched most of in the past, but it was on like Real Player 15 years ago or something, so it wasn't great quality.
Those
were the days. I'd say my main difference with them is that Kato Ninden Taiende still has a lot of slapstick and a lot of self-effacing humor, but Samurai Pizza Cats kind of takes the dialogue and the pop culture references and the self-effacement up to 11. Like the mother and son pair in the Japanese version are like, oh, there go the Pizza Cats again. Oh, they're so busy, but they'll insult them every time in Saban's version. And also, there's a lot of times where in Kato Ninden Taiende it's just filled with music, but they're just going on and on and on with dialogue in Samurai Pizza Cats. So it's a bit of a culture shock in that sense. I think that Kato Ninden Taiende is overall a better version of the show, of course. But I also have so much nostalgia for Samurai Pizza Cats, and I think what they did actually kind of works for it. I know that's probably something sinful for a lot of purists, but I think it kind of works, and I'm sure a lot of people that grew up with it would say the same, because it is a nostalgia thing.
Yeah, so I also watched roughly 3 episodes each of the dub and the original Japanese in preparation for the podcast, and rewatching the dub version, first of all, I was like, I remember absolutely none of this. And I think it's also definitely a cultural thing, or the fact that, you know, English is our spoken language. And I found the English dub to be far more obnoxious. I mean, it's a kid's show, so, yeah. I mean, there's going to be some level that me as an adult would just find annoying now. But
well, they're putting on voices, and they're insulting the Pizza Cats for most of it, right? So it is more obnoxious for sure. That's sort of the 90s pastiche when it comes to cartoons, unfortunately.
Yeah, and watching the Japanese version, obviously it's also still for kids, but I guess just the way it's presented, maybe it's just less obnoxious. I'm sure if I had grown up in the culture, I'd probably find maybe some of the like tropes or some of the voice acting also obnoxious, but I found it easier to digest the Japanese series, personally.
It doesn't have as much noise to it, right? Like, there's a lot of bad signal-to-noise ratio in the North American version. Because, like I said, this is how they present it. But, again, that's a nostalgia thing. I will say, as a kid, I had a hella crush on Polly, or Perurin. And in both versions, I wish they were a lot nicer to her. But that's just me.
It's true, yeah.
Yeah. As for the game, I've played it a few times. I have a cartridge of it. It's a yellow Famicom cart, and I don't know if it's actually a real one or not. But anyways, I can play it on my Famicom, so it is what it is. I've played it a few times, and I'll talk about my feelings of the game, obviously, as we go through it. But touching on the game, how does Kato Ninden Taiende play?
So it's separated to different stages. I don't think they're really based off any direct episodes, but they kind of give the narrative as one. And as you enter a stage, you get to pick any of the 3 Gnocchis. What are they called in the English one? Samurai Pizza Cats? Yeah, whatever. Them. So the 3, and I have my notes, so I know exactly who everyone is. So we have Yatoro, who is Speedy in the dub, and then we have Tsukashi, who is Guido, and Pururun, who you said is Polly. And you can just choose whichever of the 3 you want to run the stage with. They all have their separate special attacks, but they all function the same way. And then also while you're in the stage, there's also the rescue team. And there is, I believe, 5 of them that you can go through, and they all have their...
There's 4 of the rescue team, unless you count Francine. But you don't play as her, obviously.
Well, she matters to me. Anyway, so there, I guess there's 4 of them that you can select from the rescue team as you go through the stages, because Francine's too cool. So there's Nukinoshin, who is Goton, or the Katon, according to my really scribbly note here, but they can punch through boulders. And then you have Goton, who's Miaozma. They dig through walls. Miyatoru is Bat Cat. who can fly for a short amount of time, and Neki, who is Fritz, and they can swim. So you can pretty much rotate between anyone in the four rescue team. I think it all depends on that health meter you get, but
yeah,
this being a game for young audiences, I think the health meter refills rather quickly for someone at our level, so it's not really a hindrance, but that is the idea. And at the end, there's a boss. Pretty cool boss from the Katamaru clan, or whatever. No, the Katakara clan.
Katakara clan, yeah. The nasty, evil ninja crows. Which pizza cat did you find yourself playing as, or did you just rotate them?
For the first three stages, I rotated between the three. And then I decided, you know what, I think I like Pururin the most. I mean, when I watched the show, she was probably the one I liked the most. Anyway, as I found the other one, Tsukashi, kind of obnoxious, so I was like, I'll just go with her. Although, I admit that I found her basic attack animation a little weird with frames, but you know what, it's not a difficult game, so it wasn't like a huge hindrance, so yeah.
Her attack is a little bit slower than Yatoro's and Shashuke's, I think, but the thing about it is, I think Pururin can actually hit twice. And there's different things you can do with it. Like, you can jump while she's attacking. So, she's my favorite character from a gameplay perspective, and also my favorite character just because she's my favorite pizza cat, or my favorite Yankee. So, you know, it's just like old biases are hard to beat in terms of that, but I actually quite like her standard attack, because if there's a ninja crow slightly above me, I can start attacking and then jump, and I can carry the attack animation into an enemy that I'm jumping into. And I'm not sure if you can do that with Yatoro or Shashuke. Yeah, because I should have tested it for the podcast, obviously, but I'm not sure. She just seems to have a longer hitbox, right?
I mean, I like the concept that Tsukashi uses an umbrella, but he was pretty annoying on the show, so it's like, yeah, I'll be fine without it. It's okay.
I mean, he's a wild romantic rover. I don't mind them. I don't mind any of them. Their characteristics are obviously embellished. I don't like when they are very dismissive of Pururin, again, because she's my favorite, but also because they're just way too mean to her.
They're just dumb boys.
Oh, yeah, for sure. They want the ram girl that shoots missiles at them, right? They want Lucille or Omitsu, as she's called in Japan. The other thing about the standard attacks is that you can start attacking and then also turn backwards and attack behind you. I think everyone can do that. So the game is quite basic in how it plays. You can run, you get some more momentum for your jumps, you can call the rescue team, and there's different ways you can attack, even with your standard attack, and then there's also the Ninpo that you mentioned. So although it's quite basic, there is a fair amount of things you can do, which kind of renders the very short stages of this game a little less effectual or impactful, maybe, but I think it plays really well myself, and there's not too much I get caught up on. Sometimes...
Yeah, it's definitely responsive, so...
Yeah. Sometimes the running carried me too far or something, but when I jumped, but... Yeah. So, Samurai Pizza Cats, or Kato Ninden Taiende, as we were talking about, is a sort of side-scrolling action game based on the anime of the same title. Now, the game takes place over the course of 11 stages. Some of them you have to do as they appear, others you have the choice to select them. But for the sake of simplicity, we're going to go 1, 2, 3, you know, numerical order. So we start in stage one. There's an alien invasion going on. Now this alien, sort of like a penguin, dark priest robe thing, attacks Aetheropolis after we're introduced to the city and the characters. How do the levels generally progress in Samurai Pizza Cats? Or in Kato Ninden Taiende?
I would say level one, being the introduction stage, is pretty basic. It seems to cover a lot of the things that would teach you how to do the game. So I think this is a stage where you have the opportunity to use all your rescue team just to see what they do.
Yes.
Like there's a boulder and then there's like a digging section. I mean, the flying cat, I mean, you could use that whenever. I mean, there's really specific situations where you need to use that cat, but you can just hover if you want. It's fine. And then there's definitely a swimming section. So I think it's a good to kind of get an idea of what the different enemies are and then how you're gonna approach them with whatever pizza cat of your choice. And then just a really general idea of, just they're really basic and straightforward about telling you how to switch to the rescue cat team and then switching back to your pizza cats like instantaneous, so it's not a big deal. So yeah, it introduces a lot of the stuff that's going forward in the game really well.
Yeah, I think it's a good introductory level. In terms of enemies, they're really quite simple at this point. The Karakara Clan or the Ninja Crows will be a constant throughout the game, and they're maybe a little more, not tricky, but a bit more involved than the other enemies because they'll fly towards you, but they also have some interesting animations and they can adjust their height or elevation. So they're the ones to really look out for, but other than that, the enemies are quite standard for this kind of game. But like you said, it's a good introduction to it. We've talked about the rescue crew. I do like that you have the opportunity to use each and every one of them. You also get to play around with Nimpo a little. So we've talked a bit about Nimpo. This kind of upgrades as you get items for it, and you can also refill it with another kind of update. Now, in regards to Nimpo in specific, because this is a resource that you will be using throughout the rest of the game, do you find yourself using it through the stages, or are you saving it for the bosses, or how do you handle this stuff?
So the first time through, I kind of just use them just to check out what they are. But again, this is a game for younger audiences, so I didn't feel the need to really use them. I guess because of that, I could have just used them throughout and then not save them all for the boss. But I guess naturally going through the game, I just ended up saving them anyway and then started spamming with just my Ninpo for the boss. So at that point, it really didn't matter which Ninpo weapon I had. I just used whatever was available and so that looks neat, and then beat up a boss.
Yeah, well, usually you have the final form of your Nimpo by the time you get to the boss. If you collect the upgrade item after it's fully upgraded, you'll go back to the start, so you can kind of cycle through them. And some, but not all, Nimpo pickups in the game, you can go back and forth between the room to keep getting them. So I don't know why some and not others, but that's just how it is, I guess. I generally find myself saving it for the boss. I like to try to hit the boss a number of times and destroy them using the Nimpo attack, so it's kind of like the Robot of the Week anime
Oh
finisher,
yeah, me too, me
just
too.
for style. But there's a few occasions I found myself when an enemy was on a platform above me, and this is in a later stage, using Perurin's boomerang because, like for instance, with Sasuke, his boomerang, he throws his umbrella straight forward and it comes back to him. But with Perurin's boomerang, she throws a boomerang that goes up on an arc, so there was one or two situations where I used that to clear an enemy that was above me. Other than that, though, I do save them for the bosses. Now, speaking of the bosses against the alien penguin, this robot, Papyra Number One, I think it's called. How do the bosses go down in this game?
So at least for Papyra is kind of just hanging out, flailing its arms as these two UFO things are infinitely spawning also on the battle screen. I don't think the arms actually do damage on you, so the best thing to do is not get hit by the UFOs spawning in and then just hit sort of in the area of Papyra's like skull or like chest area and easy damage, and then you can do a cool finishing move with your Ninpo.
Yeah, for sure. It's a stationary boss, so it goes down really quick. Just watch out for the mini UFOs. And it's going to be kind of a pattern throughout this game that the bosses are, they're either, there's a couple of archetypes they follow, but we'll discuss them as they come. Now, as I said, at this point, you get to choose between stages 2, 3, and 4. I decided to go, for the sake of the podcast, with, just in the standard order. Did you change your order at all?
Yeah, I saw that was an option, and I just decided, why don't I just do it numerically? I mean,
yeah.
It doesn't really matter.
So, in Stage 2, the Shogun ship is being inaugurated. Yataro's taken Omitsu, who is, in the anime, Omitsu or Lucille in Samurai Pizza Cats, is the source of Yataro and Sasuke's affection. They really want to, you know, be her beau, but it never works out, and she has a habit of, when she gets stressed out or angry or upset, that her head opens up and she fires missiles everywhere. So
pretty useful, honestly.
It's pretty useful, and it's actually a plot point in several episodes. But she gets away from Yataro at the shipyard here, and overhears the Karakara plan to sink the ship. And because of that, they attempt to abduct her, and she blows up Karamaru, a.k.a. Bad Bird, sometimes also called Good Bird. That's the whole thing. And that's, Yataro's kind of incensed about this, wants to take care of the Ninja Crows. It's a waterfront level, but, you know, the enemies are very similar to what's before. The one new one is the octopus guitarist. They kind of walk back and forth, and they toss music notes or sparks out. There's another kind of, like, drumming enemy that does the same thing. And they do change how you have to approach them a bit, because if they're beneath you or above you, obviously they throw their attack in an arc. So, at the very least, this stage introduces something a bit different. This level is very open-ended. How did you path your way through it, and did you explore the extended underwater section?
Yeah, I definitely explored the underwater section, because it's a boat level. It's like, I mean, I'm sure the water has something interesting in it. Again, like, we're going to mention a lot on this podcast, it is for younger audiences, so we don't need to really explore all this and get all the ninpo and so on, but I did anyway. I wanted to see the stage fully. And bringing back those octopus enemies, I think they're a neat little sprite, so I'm glad they introduced them to this level.
Yeah.
I like them.
Yeah, and like I said, they become an archetype, and this game, luckily, it just builds on what it adds, so it'll add new enemy types, and then they'll keep adding that enemy type into other stages that they weren't introduced in, but they'll have a different sprite. So it keeps it a little bit relevant, and, you know, like you said, the game is on the easy side because it is for kids, but, you know, it's still something you appreciate to see. Yeah, I thought the underwater section was okay. You have plenty of column meter to get through it. Yeah, not too bad. And so Neki's dexterity in the water is unmatched, of course, so it's quite easy to get through it with him. The other cats can still function underwater, it's just very slow. The one thing I don't like about being underwater in this game is sometimes I'll use ninpo by accident when I'm trying to attack enemies, because I'm holding up for some reason. I don't think you need to. But beyond that, I mean, it's pretty simple to get through the underwater section. It's not really a maze. But you come up to the second boss of the game, Goldfish Princess 6.
So I guess it's a pretty goldfish. I don't know what she does exactly other than show up on the screen and then go from one end to the other. But it was a nice sprite, so.
Oh, it's a very lovely sprite, yeah. Yeah, I mean, again, the bosses kind of, they kind of follow these kind of archetypes. So, essentially, Goldfish Princess 6 wants to ram into you. But if you attack her before she hits you, she'll turn around and go back the other way off the screen. So, it's a pretty simple boss fight and execution. The only thing you have to watch out for is if you misjudge your jump to hit her and she hits you instead. Of course, you can take a couple hits that way, but with no projectiles and also the ninpo at your disposal, it doesn't take too long, right? Stage 3 is a little more interesting. It's the Master Plan. This takes place at High Shine Tower, a TV relay station. And the Karakara clan wants to only show programs about Lord Koan, because throughout the game and throughout the series, Koan no Kami's entire intent is to discredit the Shogun so that he can become the Shogun, he can assume that mantle, and the Karakara clan will have free reign of Eateropolis. So this is just like a propaganda run for them. It's a city top stage. It's short, has some arrow gates which take you to different places depending on what direction you're going through them. But I want to talk about the platforming in this stage because it introduces like spike platforms and more platforming to it. How do you think about the platforming introduced in stage?
To backtrack a little, since I didn't mention them in the discussion about the anime, I'm obviously biased with birds, but I find the Karakara clan very entertaining. I guess usually villains in kids' shows generally are somehow very entertaining, but I guess I just like the stupid dynamics between Koan and then the, what's his name? I think Karasu Genasai or something.
Yeah.
That's probably horribly mispronounced. I'm going to go double check. Actually, I was right. Never mind. Anyway, yeah, they're just a fun match. And then Bad Bird, who is Karamaru. He's overly dramatic as a henchman for a villain. But yeah, they're just fine, so.
This is getting away from the game a little bit, but Karamaru or Bad Bird is maybe the most developed character in the show. He has character arcs. He struggles with feelings of incompetency about not being able to best the Samurai Pizza Cats, and he struggles with his devotion to the Karakara clan when his old partner is introduced, and she's trying to reignite that spark, and he's devoted to the clan, doesn't really want to drag her into his underbelly of Eateropolis. So, the characters have character arcs, but Karamaru is actually the most interesting character in the anime.
Man, he sounds like he'd be my favorite if I watched the whole thing.
Probably. And not
although I have to admit, like, I don't know, Lord Koan is just really funny. It's also like funny in a juvenile way, but I don't know. I think his antics are just right for me in terms of a cartoon for younger audiences.
Koan no Kami, well, like any of the old shows like this, there's something about the villains that I'm usually kind of, I don't want to say sympathetic for, but I find they're usually just more interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, usually the heroes have to fit an archetype, right? One of the things about the Samurai Pizza Cats is that, like, Speedy or Yatoro is the leader, but he's not a Leonardo. He's greedy, he's selfish, he has issues, but he still has that sense of justice. So he's like the indomitable justice hero, but he's not just that, right? And yeah, I like the archetypes in Kato Ninden Toyende and some of the subversion of, but I think we're getting away from the plot.
Yeah,
here.
So stage three platforming.
Yeah,
I think it's a step up definitely from one and two. I think what also makes it more challenging is the new variety of enemies as well. There's like those smiley faces that shoot things at you or whatever.
They wag their fingers, yeah.
Yeah, and then there's also those bouncing flower boss pot things. I don't know what those things are, really.
It's like Kool-Aid Man that shoots an egg or something.
I guess that's what they are?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Just the variety of it being a more vertical stage, and maybe like enemies can be placed higher above you, kind of add a new challenge, and it's a good build-up. So, I didn't actually go through any of those arrow doors. I figured to avoid them, and I just kind of went around them, but I still think you get a good glimpse of the stage that way.
Yeah, well,
I guess you kind of just end up in the same spot eventually anyway, right?
You do, because the arrow doors, like, if you go through the section that the arrow doors point to, and you try to go back, you end up going back to the end of the section if you went up. So it's a little bit confusing in that regard. And all that happens if you go through the arrow doors, I think it's a section with follow-away platforms. So it's nothing crucial to miss out on there. What about the longer flight section in this particular level?
I actually did appreciate that, because like I was mentioning when we started the cast, there's various situational parts where Bat Cat or Miyatoru can be used. So I think that was just a neat section to figure out that, oh, you need to change your cat halfway through to make the leap.
It's about managing your health meter as much as it is like making these long flights. So, well, there's like one, really only one really long flight, but I do appreciate it because his call meter runs out quite quick when you're flying, so you still have to be kind of careful with it. The boss is a pig saucer. I don't think they actually name it in the pre-battle text. I could have just missed it.
I don't think so either.
Yeah. What do you think of the pig saucer?
Compared to Princess Goldfish 6, I think it's a step up in challenge because it's floating around and then I think it sends out these cute little flying pigs at you. But design-wise, not as cute, so not impressed.
Yeah, it stays towards the top of the screen and comes down along the side then towards you. So it is a little bit more difficult than the goldfish because of the change in elevation. But like you said, it's still a pretty simple boss to get through. But I do like that although the patterns are kind of simple, they're mixing it up a bit in terms of how they execute these patterns. So that's all good. Stage 4. Which probably has my favorite visuals in the background. This is Princess Pandemonium. Princess Usa, who in the anime is very headstrong and kind of dismissive of people beneath her and quite immature. But she kind of adapts and grows as well throughout the series to a degree. She leaves the castle and heads towards Mount Tengu, where the Karakara clan...
What could possibly go wrong?
Where the Karakara clan is hiding us, exactly. So this is sort of a mountain and waterfall stage. Some of the new enemies include, like, their spinning tornado dudes, guys that wash their hair, ladies who throw fire from their hands. The stage is basically a small enemy gauntlet when it comes down to it. What do you think about how this stage is executed?
I like the new variety of enemies. I think this stage also introduces like those flamingos or ostriches that run towards you, which
yes, yeah,
just go down very quickly, but I appreciate them. And then I like the bunnies that throw fire at you. That's like a good way to keep your spacing. Mm-hmm. The guys who wash their hair are for some reason like some of the most challenging enemies for me in this game. Every time I encounter them, I always get hit by something. So I guess I have to say, it's something about stage 4 is definitely a step up. I'm saying this about every stage, but it's definitely a good challenge for going forward. And as for the stage, I don't think it's anything too interesting other than visually, because I think it's mostly a mountain pass that you just kind of go vertically with and then punch some boulders. So
it's more about fighting than it is about platforming. So the boss is a bouncing Tengu, which makes sense on Mount Tengu. And I don't know if it drops, like, flowers or feathers or leaves or what have you, but it drops something.
Some sort of projectile attack, in a way. Compared to the pig saucer you just fought, it's definitely more active, and it's definitely more difficult than dodging the flying smaller pig. But there's not much to say about this boss, because I don't think it did anything else other than just bounce around and drop those leaves/birds/feathers, but I guess it was cool and definitely a change. So, as you mentioned earlier, I think it's neat that they keep changing up and making a variety of different situations in this.
It's definitely trickier than previous bosses because if the bouncing gets somewhat erratic, I think it's somewhat predictable because it'll bounce towards you then away from you, kind of thing. So, if you move too much, I think it could actually get more difficult. But the projectiles that it tosses out, it tosses 4 of them out, and there's space between them to stand. So as long as you're paying attention and you're patient with this fight, it shouldn't be too bad. So stage 5, and I should have mentioned now, again, you get the choice to choose between 5, 6, and 7. Again, for the sake of convenience, we're going to go right to 5 now. This is like a gold rush. Yotaro sees Jinarasai and Ko-On on the way back from delivering.
Yeah, they're on a date or something.
Yeah. I was going to say Yotaro's on a date with them. No, but no. He comes across them and hears about a plan for an ultimate weapon. And this is introducing sort of the like overlapping plot of the game, this ultimate weapon. But they need to find hidden gold to fund an ultimate weapon. this particular episode is based on the episode where they're looking for hidden gold beneath Edoropolis Castle. But yeah, they find something else, right? The stage starts outside under the light of a moon. It's a pretty simple level until you go down the ladder. Then it becomes a very open-ended underground cavern with some lava and lots of platforming. How labyrinthine is this actually? I mean, the lava only damages you. It's not an instant kill, so it's a bit more forgiving. It's more of an endurance test, unless you just seek out the boss instead of collecting items. What do you think of the maze level?
Well, when I started the stage, I was like, oh, this is so cool. We have a cloudy sky. We have the moonlit night. And then it descends into the cave and volcano level. I was like, oh, never mind. This is not cool anymore. I find the lava section pretty dull. I guess it's just the lack of variety of enemies, and I just find the layout just more annoying than labyrinthine. So, not a fan of that.
Luckily, you can get to the end of the stage pretty quick if you know where to go. Or even if you don't know where to go, it's easy to find the exit. I kind of like that it has a maze. I kind of wish it was a bit more of a maze that you had to find things in and then maybe have to find a key or something in a maze. That might have been a cool way to add variety to the game. But I kind of like this. It is, as you say, not as interesting as it could be, but I definitely like that the game is constantly changing the kind of stages you're going through. Now, the boss, it's basically a large version of Akon no Kami. Now, you think that someone who's secretly trying to seize the shogunate for himself wouldn't make his evil robot a giant version of himself. However, that's what's happened here.
Samurai Pizza Cats have, like, the worst disguise, so I don't think this is too bad.
Yeah, like, they even in Kata Ninden Tande, they say, they're like, oh, she does not recognize Yotaro in a civilian garb or something. Like, yeah, I'm sure she doesn't. What do you think of Super Koan number 8?
Okay, since I have a bias for the Karakara clan already, because I think the villains are just funny and amusing, I think just seeing Super Koan number 8 was neat. Its attacks are pretty much throwing a fan around, and then I think occasionally the boulders fall for some reason. So that actually makes it fairly dangerous, but you could just pretty much stand right in front of Super Koan 8, and then I think attacks can actually neutralize the throwing fan attack, so...
Yes, for sure. They can.
So not really actually that dangerous, but love that design.
Yeah, the dropping stalactites are actually not difficult to predict, but they come out faster than you would expect for this game, maybe. So they're actually one of the more dangerous boss attacks in the game. But like you said, it's a stationary boss, and you can destroy its fans with attacks, so it's pretty easy just to rush it down. But I definitely appreciate the flavor of the boss, and it's a very nice sprite. Like, I'll talk about the aesthetics of this game in the final thoughts, of course, but it's a very clean game and a very pretty game at times. We're going to move on to Stage 6. Get that super energy, which is what the Karakara clan need to power their ultimate weapon. It starts with Yotaro being fired from the pizzeria gun. He delivers pizzas to Koan and finds out they're seeking something on the ship because they're ordering pizzas for the Karakara clan, I think, to keep their spirits up. And, yeah, he decides to spy on Lord Koan while he's delivering the pizza. So we're back to a waterfront. And I want to talk for a minute about the banana enemies introduced in this, because they are my favorite enemy in the game. Because it's just a banana that just jumps around, like, dabbing, and then slips on itself because it's a fucking banana. That's my favorite enemy in this game. Like, my favorite standard enemy. Yeah, that's it, I guess.
Well, just to bring back the rest of the stage, I think the stage, I guess, is presented more cool. But maybe that's because I just dislike the lava design so much, that lava volcano cave, that I was like, oh, we're on a boat. Thank you. And there are some underwater sections here. There's like a short one in the beginning, but then there's a more lengthier one that I think is more demanding for Nikki. So I think that makes it more interesting. As for the boss, Yeah, I know that you can use Neki as the underwater cat, but at that point I was like, I might as well just finish off with the Samurai Pizza Cats. I had Perrin, so just by it that way.
Alright, so we'll get to the boss then. The boss is a penguin captain. Just moves back and forth and shoots bubbles. Mostly they want to complicate you by having this underwater boss named Pirate Number 11, I think. Now, you like you said, you can use help, and I tried that. See, the thing is, you can move a lot more freely with Neki underwater, and you can defeat the boss before your health meter runs out, but he's significantly weaker than, like you said, you were using Perurun. So, it's actually faster to use the Pizza Cat, or the Yankee, to do it. And yeah, that's how I use the help for us, and at least for most of us. And it was slow, but it was doable. Which is kind of funny, because he should be quick but doable, right? But the Yankee is just more powerful and more potent.
I guess that is the added challenge for that fight, is that if you use a Yankee, then you're going to be a little awkward underwater. And then there's all these bubbles flying out everywhere, but I guess if you kind of rush it also, then it's not too big of a deal.
Yeah. Overall, that's a nice stage. Like, you've got those masts that you're up on in some underwater sections. It's a nice variety. Moving on to Stage 7, the giant maze at Edo Dome. Kakashi loses Umitsu in the giant maze, and people are just going
other
missing.
Other people have also gotten lost here. How convenient that we should go save people.
Instead of staying at the giant maze and looking for Umitsu, he decides to go back home to the pizzeria. But, we go to the giant maze at Edo Dome. Now, this level is a funhouse. Talk about this level.
Well, I guess the presentation of this level is something.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I should be nicer to the lava section, because I know it's a fun house, but I feel like the presentation was a little too much.
You think? I thought
Maybe like on the tackier side. It was a lot going on.
Well, imagine going to a circus and saying it's tacky. I think the clowns would look at you and say, no shit. But, you know. No, I guess it is a little overwhelming, the design that goes into this. But I kind of like the garishness of it. And then if you take a false door, you go into sort of like an empty, no music, dark room. So there's actually a little bit of flavor built into this stage. I kind of like it in terms of its theme, just because it is kind of garish.
I do like the maze aspect of it. I did appreciate that. I just think the presentation was a little too much for me personally. Gosh, the clowns are going to be so upset at me.
Some of the enemies are also false enemies. They turn into like these bouncing, inflatable robots, which is kind of interesting to see. Lots of tricks in it. They've got little clowns with trumpets, I think. There's some interesting enemies in the stage. But mostly, I found it a welcome change myself. I like the maze levels, and I guess we're going to have to agree to disagree on this, because I like the flavor of it as well. However, the, I don't know if I want to call him the secondary or tertiary antagonist of this game, because
this dude just showed up.
Yeah. Kuon no Kami is the primary antagonist, but Karamero is the secondary antagonist, and then I guess Dr. Purple is the tertiary or quaternary antagonist. If you want to put Genericide in there, it's like, holy shit, there's lots of antagonists in the game. But this character is a
evil scientist kind of guy?
Yeah, he's an evil scientist. He's basically Dr. Wily, except a crow. And, well, he even has, like, a Dr. Wily machine, right? But he's a Famicom game-only character, which is, I kind of remember an old scientist character in the anime. I didn't get that far in, but it might have been an old cat around the time that the Yankee get the Supreme Catatonic. I'm not sure what that machine's called in Kato Ninden Taiyende, but it's like their Zord kind of thing. Anyways.
I guess it's neat that they added a new character for the video game, but I feel as a kid, I'd be upset that this new character doesn't show up at all in the cartoon. So, I don't know where I would if I was a developer or like making this game, I don't know if I would, if introducing a new character is a good idea. I just feel as a kid, I would want the same exact content. But me now, I'm just like, I don't know. It's cool. There's a new character. Awesome.
Where I like Mega Man at the time, I would have liked, oh, Jesus, this is a Samurai Pizza Cats version of Dr. Wily. I'm all for it. Anyways, you're probably chomping at the bit for me to get to the boss that Dr. Purple introduces. Mechabot Blue Button.
Yeah, Mechabot Blue Button. What a cutie. I love this bat design. Maybe I also just miss Castlevania so much because it's like this cute little bat person, and they kind of just teleport around and they send out the bats at you. It's actually really easy. But what a cute design. It's not as a robust design as, say, Lord Koan from the two stages ago, or, say, Princess Goldfish, but what a cute boss. It was a shame it was so easy, but what a cute boss.
I would argue it's definitely Castlevania-inspired as well, but, you know, it's a teleporting vampire that throws bats. I thought it was a pretty cool boss. And more importantly, it's different than just the machine that moves back and forth boss that we've seen a few times already.
Yeah, so, that's true.
Although it is easy, and again, we're giving it the consideration that it is a game for young players, it definitely does something different, and I'm always for that. So Stage 8, we're brought immediately here. It's called The Ultimate Weapon Revealed, and that'll be at the end of the level. Wanko no Okami directs you to Cape Koan. And it's another mountaintop stage. It's an ice cave labyrinth, but this isn't as bad as the other ones, right? This is just another simple labyrinth.
Yeah.
Yeah, so unfortunately, I don't really have a lot to say about the level here. It's sort of something we've seen before. I don't know if you want to comment on the ice physics. Like, the ice physics in this game will have you slip across the ice even if you're standing still. So
I guess that is changing things a bit in the game, but yeah. I don't think there's enough ice for it to really define the stage.
Exactly. The ice isn't used in a way that will actually, like, really challenge you. I don't think there's a lot of platforming on ice over pits or anything like that. It's not really the most relevant obstacle that they could have added, but it's another labyrinth and I kind of like them, so I don't mind it. It's just not much new to talk about. Interestingly enough, the boss is the Dark Four, which are the Rude Noise, and they're sort of an elite part of the Karakara clan. They're a big deal in the anime, so it's kind of unfortunate that they're just relegated to a small one-stage boss role in this game, because really, you could have fought each one of them as a mini-boss throughout the game. I think that would have been cool, and then have the ultimate encounter here.
Yeah, that would have been a good idea, actually, yeah.
So they, even in the anime, they have this ability that they can combine into a robot. And that is that the Macro, which apparently is based off of Macross. So I automatically like that. But what do you think about the fight against the Macro?
So the design is cool. But unfortunately, the Macro pretty much just goes back and forth on the stage like other bosses. I think the most annoying thing is that it kind of drops these balls that will roll on the floor, and those will be obnoxious.
Yes.
So, in a way, that is challenging, but I wish the Macro would actually be more active. And for them being one of the big antagonists of the Karakara clan, I think it's a bit of a disappointment that all they do is just go back and forth, but whatever.
It's too bad, because in the anime, they're jerks and all that, but they all have cool designs. Yeah, it would have been interesting if they were more fleshed out here, but I guess they kind of want to have them in there for the fan service. I think with the balls that this thing shoots out, it's complicated by the fact that it's up on, like, a ledge, and there's uneven ground. And so that's actually the most dangerous thing about the stage, is that you're kind of likely to take a couple of hits of damage just based on, like, how the level's laid out. Unless you're very meticulous. Like, if you want to go up and hit it once or twice and then go back to the ground and dodge the balls and do the same again and again. So it's about being very meticulous if you want to get through this unscathed. Otherwise, it's fairly likely you'll take a hit or two just based on the limited range of motion you have due to the terrain. I also agree that this should be a bit more substantial based on who you're actually fighting. But I think it's definitely a cool sprite and all that. So there's good and there's bad to it. The next three levels are going to focus on the ultimate weapon, the Mecha Dankanju. Now, this is revealed at the end of level 8. It's essentially a great thing from the Daria series. It's a giant whale battleship. At the start of stage 9, there's a long cutscene. The Mecha Dankanju is attacking Idropolis. Now, the Pizza Cats summon their pterodactyls. I think they're called Goonie Birds in the Samurai Pizza Cats, and Tortsukin, I think, in the Captain Ninden Tayende.
It's, I wouldn't recall what they're called, yeah.
Yeah. They're like pterodactyls that combine with the Pizza Cats, and they really change their armor when they do. It's kind of unfortunate there's no flying stage in this game, or you actually get to use the armor. It's mostly used to allow them to board the ultimate weapon. I really wish that this stage was a flying stage fighting through defenses until you land. But
that would have been really cool, yeah.
It's asking too much. It's just like when they get this armor in the anime, as a kid, I remember that being really hype about that and being really excited about that. So it's a little unfortunate that you don't actually get to use it. As for the level, it's a mechanical space stage. There's some beam traps, there's some platforming, there's sparks that move around the platforms, kind of like a Mario game. How does the platforming here compare to the rest of the game?
I think it's definitely a lot more heavy with platforming compared to the previous stages. It's probably why I liked it so much. It does feel kind of Mario with the electrical traps going on and off, and you need to time your jumps. So I thought that was cool. There's not too many enemy encounters here, but it's mostly focusing on platforming. But for the most part, you know, you get to use your Batcat at one point just to get a higher ledge, and then you got some situations where one of those octopuses are on the platform above you, so you need to worry about that. So it's definitely more engaging, and I was more receptive of the stage due to that.
And then the boss, the Mechabot Warrior Yellow Poncho, sort of a sombrero-wearing, poncho-wearing boss that gets angry when the Nyanki don't think it looks very threatening. It bounces around and throws music notes around. It tosses some, and then it also like directly shoots them at you. What do you think of this particular boss?
Yeah, when they were making fun of this boss, that's when I knew, oh no, this boss is probably going to be a bit challenging. And admittedly, I think it was. I think the other set of notes kind of homes in on you, or at least that was the impression I got, because,
right,
you know, playing it, you'd want to follow the boss. So I think you take a fair bit of damage against this, playing really carefully, because I certainly was not, because I was overconfident. So I got hit a fair bit amount. But otherwise, I actually do appreciate how active this boss is. So I think it was one of the good fights in the game.
Yeah, it's a little more erratic, and it's similar to the Tengu we fought before, except it has two different kinds of attacks, and it's also a smaller profile, so it's more difficult to hit it. So yeah, I think it's actually, it might be the more challenging boss in the game, because I don't think the ones coming up are particularly hard, but yeah, I like it. It's definitely cool, and yeah, the Nyanki will know better next time not to taunt a robot that they're going to fight, so.
No, they won't. I don't know.
No, they won't know better. You're right. Stage 10 is the decisive battle, and this is talking to Dr. Purple. It's more or less a trek through this airship. It's not as dangerous, but it's one final labyrinth that lets you use all your helper cats again. There's like bubbles, and or like not bubbles, but like patches of water in the sky, and different things to use the rescue cats.
Yeah, it's the, hey, remember you have a whole team of rescue cats in this game, so you better use them.
It's nice to be able to use these again, right?
I was going to say, like, the stage isn't very platforming as it was in the previous stage, but it's platforming in the sense that you have to rotate through all your rescue cats, and I really like that this whole stage is kind of focused on them.
Yeah, so it doesn't do anything crazy. It doesn't do anything, like, super unique, but it allows you to use all the options that you have available to you, and I can always appreciate that. It's a good level. It's also the only level to have two bosses. A Mechabot Red Dragon and the Chicky Chicky Chicken Z battle armor. We'll talk about the Red Dragon first.
Yeah, so the Red Dragon kind of drops this ball and then rolls on the floor. It's kind of like playing bowling. I don't know. I always describe it as the bowling ball dragon. But otherwise, it's not too difficult of a fight. I think it has projectiles, but I think you can also stop those with your attack. So really, yeah, the biggest concern is just not walking into the dragon as it drops the bowling ball. But otherwise, it's a pretty cool design. I feel like the design is just a little too, like, realistic, which I guess is the joke, but I don't think it has the same kind of pixel cool quality that, say, Princess Goldfish or Koan number 8 did.
It looks too much like a regular-ass dragon.
Yeah, but of course that is to juxtapose with Chicka Chicka Chicken Z, which is obviously supposed to be ridiculous. Maybe it's because of the fact that it is supposed to be ridiculous, I just took it seriously, just like Poncho. And I would argue this fight is maybe also a little more challenging just because of the fire pillars it drops. Or I don't know if it drops it, but they just kind of appear on the floor. And then it also has this other attack. I don't know if the arms hurt you, but I was careful anyway. So I think it's a step up, even though you can't kind of go between the legs and just dodge stuff. But
the legs don't hurt you, which is a very big boon to fighting this, because I think if you get in contact with the window that Dr. Purple is in, or the arms, you'll take damage. But since you can walk through the legs, and usually there's only one pillar of fire on screen at one time, you can generally kind of control where that lands and then hit him once or twice and repeat, right? I think it's a brilliantly designed boss in terms of appearance. It's really cool. And yeah, it's like, really, this is like the Wily Machine. So this is Wily Machine KNT. So
yeah, it's a silly design, but I appreciate it, you know?
Definitely cool. And fighting two bosses back-to-back is a bit different. You do get a refill on health between them, I think. But not Nimpo. I use my Nimpo on the Red Dragon because I think it's easier to take damage in that fight. So I use both of my full-screen Nimpo on that fight. So once we defeat the Chicky Chicky Chicken Z battle armor, Dr. Purple decides he's going to split. He's going home. He's done. Gets into his Wily Saucer and gets the hell out of the dodge. This takes us to stage 11, where the Pizza Cats, or the Yankee, are going to chase down Kwon no Kami. This is just sort of one final rush of enemies and mile obstacles. I don't think there's a lot to say about the level. It's kind of short, kind of just
it has a very obnoxious background, I'll say that.
Does it? Okay.
I guess because I'm so thinking about the presentation of this game, because I think it does a lot of neat things, so I get really nitpicky about this, but I think the starting background of the stage is just really obnoxious with the, like, I don't know what they are, like tiles or something that are glowing, and it's just really distracting and obnoxious to me. But I guess in terms of the enemy variety, I think they're pretty much all here, or at least all the more difficult ones, so it is a good build-up as it is the final stage.
I don't mind the stage, it's just that I don't think there's much unique to talk about it in terms of the rest of the game. I clearly wasn't as bothered about the backgrounds as you were, because I don't even remember something to complain about for them, so that is what it is. You finally, however, at the end of it, get to fight Karamaru.
So as for Karamaru, he kind of teleports in and out of the stage, and he will usually hang out at the top of the screen because he's a bird and flying. He'll occasionally do this dive attack at you, which goes kind of diagonally. I would argue that's actually kind of difficult to dodge at times, especially since there are kind of two platforms in the way. But otherwise, it's a very simplistic fight. I think it was a fitting fight for Karamaru versus any of the Nyonki, so I wish it was a bit more active, but at the same time, I still liked it.
Yeah, I wish he would have had a few more phases or something where he could do different things. He could appear on the ground and do an attack or his own version of the Cat's Eye Slash or something. He just basically dashes at you. You hit him and he flies back to the top. It gets a little bit more unpredictable towards the end when he starts flying across the screen super rapidly, and then he'll stop at random and do the dash. Yeah, it's not a difficult fight, but I think it's a good climactic fight. it's an appropriate fight because, again, Karamero is one of the most important characters in the series and one of the fan favorites. Yeah, and just a generally good character. So, yeah, I'm kind of glad that they finished it off that way, and I've got no complaints about that. The ultimate weapon is destroyed, and we can watch the ending, and we can move on to final thoughts. So that brings us to the final thoughts about Kato Ninden Taiende, otherwise known as Samurai Pizza Cats. We'll start with license games of the era. How does Kato Ninden Taiende compare to license games of this era?
I feel like I haven't played a lot of license games in the era to really have a good opinion of them, but I feel like out of most of my play, they were pretty bad. So I think it's definitely refreshing to see that Kato Ninden Taiende was actually a fairly good game and responsive and did a lot of variety of things. So that alone makes it a lot better than a lot of licensed games I can think of offhand. But maybe that's also because a lot of the licensed games I can think of offhand have such a reputation for being terrible, unless I guess the situation is that a lot of licensed games are terrible of the era.
Sometimes they're absolute dog shit. But you also get games that are actually kind of good, like Willow is actually a pretty decent game. I think G.I. Joe and the Atlantis Factor are pretty decent. There's some, but I would say that Kato Ninden Taiende is in the upper echelon of licensed games from the time.
I guess that's also an issue of a lot of Western licensed games. Like the ones that were more based on Western IPs were probably bad. And I'm sure there's a lot more variety of Japanese licensed games that were probably good, but we wouldn't have much experience with them.
Well, Transformers Convoy no Nazo is terrible. Astro Boy's licensed game on the Famicom is very confusing. So it depends, right? Like, you've got some good and some bad. Yurusei Yatsura is a terrible licensed game.
They're mostly bad. I'm just, I don't know.
I mean, it's just the case that's like it's always been, right? Like, for every Capcom Disney game you have, like the X-Men license game from LGN is terrible. And yeah, it's like it runs the...
I guess that is just a thing in video games, right? Some license games are good. Yeah. A lot are bad.
Yeah, yeah.
This one happens to be one of the good ones.
Yeah, I enjoy it. Like I said, it's pretty simple, but it's playable, which is more than you can say for a lot of games. And yeah, I think it's fairly good when it's actually very good when you compare it to its contemporary licensed games for the most part.
And it definitely captures the feel of the series, even though I've only seen 3 episodes from each language. But just from the general idea, I think it captures that very well.
Yeah, the cutscenes like play out similar to how they would in the series. Some of the scenarios are based on the series, and it's quite colorful as well and quite clean looking. Which brings me to the presentation of the game. Does the presentation hold up? I know you had issues with the funhouse and with the final mechanical stage, but does the presentation of this game hold up?
Yeah, I know I had some nitpicks, but I think overall, I think the presentation was pretty cool. Obviously, there are games that do better sprite work, and there are games that do worse sprite work, but I think it definitely holds up in a lot of occasions. I think it really shines through with the cutscenes that are in the intro and outro of each stage, and I think they're very animated, and I think in terms of just sort of having a narrative is fun. That's something I think younger audiences really appreciate. I also really appreciate it still, just how it's done. So in terms of that presentation, it's good. I guess the soundtrack is pretty alright. I can't remember anything I really liked offhand, but there's nothing that was really terrible. And Yeah, so I like some of the enemy looks. I like some of the boss designs, as I discussed. So overall, it's positive for presentation.
Yeah, I'd say you're right on the audio side of things. Like, they've got a digitized version of the main theme. I think the fan translation for it has a digitized version of the Samurai Pizza Cats theme, which is, obviously isn't to credit the original game, because I don't think it would have been in there. But yeah, the music's okay, but I like the compositions, but it could be a bit better quality. In terms of the visuals, I love them. Like, they're nice, they're vibrant, they're colorful, they've got some beautiful backgrounds, especially the mountain stages. It's too bad that stage with the moon in the background, you only see it for a few seconds.
I wish that stage was so much longer.
Yeah, because you like the moon, I know.
Oh, yeah, but, yeah.
But yeah, I think it's quite pretty. And like, rewatching some of these old episodes of KNT, I'm like, damn, this show actually looks really nice. It definitely has a look from the era, but it also colorful and has a lot of style and flavor to it. It's really nice, and to see that translated to like the Famicom game, like the cats will look at you if you're idle for a second, and they're very clear, they're very colorful, they're very distinct. That's solid, the presentation. Which brings me to final thoughts on the game. Do you have any final thoughts on Kato Ninden Taiende?
I guess I kind of said a lot of it already in terms of how I was very receptive to the presentation and just how it captures what the cartoon is, even though I didn't watch the full cartoon, but I get that impression it does. And it's hard to really be nitpicky or really critical and negative about the game because it is aimed for younger audiences. So I can't really say, like, oh, you know, it was really easy and I didn't die at all because whatever, you know, that's not something I can say about it. But I think if I had played this game as a kid, and it's a shame that it was never licensed for here, I probably would have really enjoyed it. I think it just has the stuff as a kid I would really get into. I think it's something at my skill level as a kid I'd also be able to clear, so I could appreciate the whole game. I think, I guess as me now, an adult, it's still a good game. It's not, I'm not crazy about it because I don't exactly have the nostalgia or memories of it. But I think overall it's still a positive game.
Yeah, now, clearly I really like the game. I'm not going to sit here and say it's a, you know, fantastic game, the greatest around or anything like that. But it's a really solid game. And like you said, everything works. Everything's kind of clear about it. It's exemplary in terms of what it's going for, and I really appreciate that. And like, if this game had come out on the Super Famicom instead and you had so many more functions and all that, then the gameplay could be a lot more interesting, a lot more involved. But I think it does a lot of cool things. It's not a long game to play through, so I think for anyone who's a fan of the series, as you mentioned, if you have that connection, it's something to absolutely play because you'll get the most enjoyment out of it. I think for people that are interested in playing Famicom games, it's an extremely easy game to play beyond the language barrier because nothing in the actual gameplay needs an understanding of Japanese to do it. And, you know, it's a very cute, colorful game that if you're just getting into the Famicom scene, it's a pretty decent one to just play through and just enjoy something quick and colorful and cute. Like, I personally think it's a fantastic game, but I know its limitations, and I know its right?
It definitely seems like a game that if you like load up the patch or something and just give it to kids now, maybe they'll enjoy it, even if they're not fans of the series or know what the series is about. Maybe they'll at least have enjoyment from having the three different cats to choose from and then seeing all the different abilities of the rescue team. And just the little cutscenes can give them, like, a fun story to get hooked onto. So, even from that standpoint, I think it's still a good game.
Oh, for sure. For sure. That's an interesting point. I wonder how kids would react to that nowadays.
Yeah, I guess the other thing is just how would kids react to an older game, for one thing. But I feel like the basics of it are hopefully something they'd be receptive to.
My nephews are receptive to older games. Well, probably because of what my brother likes. But I find that older games, there's not that barrier of a learning curve often to them. Like, it's what you see is what you get kind of thing. maybe some surprises, maybe some advanced mechanics, but I find kids usually quite open to playing older games. Like, when I first started collecting, my younger brother really fell in love with Super R-Type and Gradius 3, but he was also intimidated to play some 3D games that I would consider quite easy. He was quite young at the time, and it's just more approachable to play games that don't have that extra layer of, well, perceived complexity, because I'm not saying that there's no layer of complexity to older games or a higher skill cap or anything like that. But it's always funny to me that he'd rather, you know, play through whatever of Super R-Type rather than try to, like, tackle certain jumps in a Mario game or something, right? So, yeah, there's definitely a divide there, and I think that with a lot of maybe mobile games that kids are playing, they're probably, well, they're evil to an extent, of course, but there's also usually a more simplistic kind of game. Or a simplistic kind of cash register, I guess. But, yeah, I think kids...
Where is this tangent going, Matt?
Yeah, I think kids are quite open to it. It depends. Like, when a kid gets maybe to... Not a young kid, but when they start getting towards their preteens, they might be like, oh, I only want to play the newest thing. But I think they're kind of open to old games when they're still young. You were mentioning about... you would have played Samurai Pizza Cats if it was released as Samurai Pizza Cats in the West back then. I'm not sure why it wouldn't have been. I think maybe it had to do with the distribution of the show. I think it actually showed in the U.S. later than it did in Canada and other parts of the world, and the Super Nintendo would have been out at the time.
Yeah, I guess it's entirely possible.
The show was popular. Like, people in school liked it, and I watched it again and again for a couple of years while I was on YTV, of course, but I don't know if it was ever, like, super, super popular, right? It wasn't like, okay, we gotta bring over Captain Ninja and Tayande and the Famicom to Western audiences. Like, it was probably not the greatest value proposition at the time. I would love to be able to eat that up like crazy, but yeah, it probably would be a $200 NES game at right now, so... Maybe it's better it didn't. So my final thoughts in the game, I really like it. And if you're an enthusiast of this anime, play it. If you like the Famicom, play it. Before we go, is there any thoughts on pizza?
I do like pizza, yeah.
Fair enough. I like pizza. I think it's... I don't think I'm as crazy about it as some people are, but I won't turn my nose up at it. Yeah, I like pizza.
As long as we both like pizza, I guess the podcast can continue.
Fair enough. Except now it's over. So this has been the podcast for June 2021, not 2012, focusing on Kyato Ninden Tayende, otherwise known as Samurai Pizza Cats for the Famicom. Chris, where can we reach you?
You can reach me at twitter.com/Karasu, CAWRASU. Am I a part of the Karakara clan? Maybe, I don't know. Anyway, as for that Kingsfield wiki that I'm still contributing to, it's the xselector.wiki.com. Xselector is spelled EXCELLECTOR.
And where can we reach Arrow?
You can reach Agro ordering even more pizzas. No, she's done ordering pizzas. She's good now. At twitter.com/agrocast, AGROCAST.
And you can reach me at twitter.com/metazoic, MATTOZOIC. It's like the Mesozoic here, except the dinosaurs are better. We've got dinosaur animaloids. I wasn't prepared for...
Yeah, there were no dinosaurs in this, were there?
Not in the game, anyways. I'll have to continue watching the series. And the website is the same, metazoic.com. Chris, what are we doing for July?
July will be my Birthcast Month podcast, and I've been savoring this game for a while now, but it's Rock Band and Forte. Not Mega Man and Bass, because I just don't like Game Boy Advance ports, so I guess we'll just have to play the cool Super Famicom version.
Yeah, fair enough, and I've only played the, well, I've played the Super Famicom version through certain methods back in the day, but I beat Rockman and Bass, so it'll be interesting to go back and play that. I won't remember any differences, but it'll be interesting to go back and play that.
Yeah, we'll be playing both characters, so we'll have a lot to discuss there.
Yeah, definitely. So until July then, cheers.
Cheers.